Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Ah, great to have you with us. It is the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered today, this week, this month, and all of this year by our great mates at Castrol. Get some Castrol in your engine. Do it. Do it now. Will Dale, do it now. Welcome.
I do have Castrol in my engine.
Good man.
As it happens.
Yes. Correct. And absolutely not fibbing either.
No.
I've seen the sticker in your car from its last service. Hey, we're going to talk New Zealand because the Supercars Championship, the Repco Supercars Championship, is in Taupo.
Taupo.
Correct. Just checking that we're on it. This weekend, new venue, return to the, of the championship to the land of the long white cloud, which I haven't heard that used for a long time, so I thought I'd just
reckon you'll hear it a few times this weekend.
Yeah, you might hear it a few times. The Shaky Isles gets a run as well.
See, I feel like I haven't heard that one in a while.
You heard it then. I'm going to get through them all on this podcast. So we thought it was a good chance to take a look at what's happened in the past with supercars and New Zealand across Pukekohe and Hamilton as well. And when I sat there writing some notes for this and jogging back through my memory bank, this place, in terms of New Zealand and supercars, has generated so many memorable moments. So Bathurst stands alone for remember when type moments. I reckon New Zealand is an equal second with maybe Adelaide and maybe one or two others. But I think it's really up there because you look at what Kiwis have done there, and it's not just what Kiwis will remember has happened there. It's what we can remember on this side of the Tasman as well.
For sure. It's you just look through the list of it. So we've raced championship-wise in New Zealand 20 times prior to this weekend, and pretty much every year you can just look through and go, oh, yeah, that happened that year. Mm. That happened that year.
Big shunts, bit of drama, weather.
Some good racing.
Some great racing, some big shunts.
The TV signal being turned off.
I was going to get to that. That's another one. I do have some great memories of some really good after parties as well, which I can tell you some of those stories that won't get me in trouble with anyone.
Well.
No, true. Nothing too bad. So the thing that we should rewind back, there's a lot of younger supercars fans who might not be aware that in the mid-80s to the early 90s, touring car racing in New Zealand at the end of the year was a lot of Australian teams and sometimes European teams competing on back-to-back weekends at the Wellington Street Race and the Pukekohe 500, or call it whatever it was called that particular year.
Yes.
So there was this great history already from mid-85 when the Wellington 500 Street Race kicked off. It was early in the year in 85 and 86 and 87, and then it became late in the year from a World Touring Car round in 87 onwards. And then you had Pukekohe as a bit of a match-up event on the following weekend.
Like if you were going over for Wellington,
you may as well be there for two. And that is absolutely where I'm going. That forget all this bullshit about going to Asian Formula One races and all this stuff that I keep reading. I do want to hear it, though, from supercars themselves as to whether this is something that they're interested in or could happen. But the number one priority for any further rounds outside of Australia must be a second New Zealand race, and you can't change my mind on it.
Well, it's funny you say that because Barclay Nettlefold was on New Zealand radio this morning talking about that very thing, and he's very keen to have a doubleheader in New Zealand.
Has to be.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. There's a massive amount of sponsor crossover in terms of businesses that back the Supercars Championship, its teams, its drivers that are in both camps, Australia and New Zealand. It makes so much logical sense that any energy going into anything else, no, the energy has to go into this.
It'd be a nice way to start the season, to be perfectly honest.
I could see it. There has been a little bit of description about having a New Zealand enduro, but I feel like that's probably a step too far.
Yeah.
I don't think we would need to go that far.
No, but I don't think so.
I mean, you think about what we're going to cover in this episode and you'll get to the end of it and go, well, there's been a lot of really good stuff happen, not an enduro in sight.
No, apart from those early Wellington and Pukekohe races.
And I mean once we've had the championship there from 2001 onwards. So a lot of people will remember that in 1996 there was back-to-back weekends, Pukekohe, Wellington, 12 cars from what wasn't quite the NV8 supercars, but it was about to be, made the trip across. Mobil backed it. Mobil, huge backers, we've got to say. Yes, we're backed by Castrol. They've been huge in New Zealand too, but Mobil and Nissan really got behind a lot of those events in the 80s and the 90s to make that all happen. Of course, Murph has this amazing run. I mean, we do all talk about his three-peat with the Kmart team once the championship went there, but it was really a four-peat because in 96 he won overall, took over from Craig Lowndes. They just won Sandown. They just won Bathurst. Murph steps in and blitzes them at Pukekohe and then does enough at Wellington to win the little series there. So absolutely huge and probably bigger for his career than winning Bathurst, which sounds crazy but true.
Well, it basically sealed that sealed the 97 HRT drive, or did he already have it by that point?
I think he signed the deal in Wellington.
Yeah.
From memory.
It's worth noting that those two weekends drew huge crowds. Massive. Both at Wellington and at Pukekohe.
And the Wellington track was not the same track that had been used for the 500K enduro race previously. It did morph and change quite a bit during the 500 era. But the 96 race, they tried 2-litre cars. Mm. I think a lot of people forget that. 93 and 94. 93, it was still an endurance race with a couple of super tourers, the New Zealand sort of touring cars at the time. No good.
Yeah, Glenn Seaton, Shera Mondeo with Paul Radisich.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And in 94, it was a round of the Asia Pacific Touring Car Championship for 2-litre cars. There was about 11 cars. Bondi was in the Hyundai. That's how it was going.
Wasn't there a Diet Coke car that got demolished that weekend
Wrote one off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dude wrote one off at Wellington.
Mm.
And I think they had to fly over another car for Pukekohe for the following weekend. So New Zealand very quickly went, hang on, we need to go V8s. And they tried to do a New Zealand series in 95, but it didn't quite get up.
Mm.
But it did for 96. So it took 5 years to get the championship proper to go to New Zealand for 2001 when that kicked off. And do you remember what the name of that first round was?
Was it the Boost Mobile V8 International?
It was. It was run by IMG back then. Remember that they ran Bathurst at the time. So Boost Mobile has been around in V8 supercars now for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And for all the times that we're not going to be involved and we're going to change, I've been there for a very long time, as it turns out. So, yeah, the Boost Mobile V8 International, that was when Boost was kicking off back in that early 2000 period. So the Murph, I mean, the thing that I think solidified straight away Pukekohe as a absolute part of the calendar, if Murph hadn't rolled out and won like he did in those first few years, it would have been still a great event, still well supported, still well attended, but it had this ambiance to it. It had flavour with the hometown hero beating the Aussies, beating the other Kiwis, king of Pukekohe, literally, and it just made it even more special and elevated. And because of the time of year it was, being off the back of Bathurst, those first 3 years were all in November.
Mm.
It was the perfect time for that stuff to be at top of mind for everybody in motorsport, sport, and general awareness in New Zealand. It was a big thing.
Well, the idea of Murph continually winning, it was an ongoing storyline each of those 3 years. Who could finally knock him off? And it took years for it to actually happen. But it's also worth noting that for maybe a four-hour period there, Murph didn't win the very first race at Pukekohe.
That's right. That honour was with Mark Larkham, who should never have had that honour, but was declared the winner of race one in 2001. And that was all a weird weather red flag situation, wasn't it?
The number 10 Falcon was sitting sideways across the track when he was awarded the victory, was it not?
Yeah, something like that. It was one of those silly things where everyone knew that it wasn't right, so they sorted it out pretty quickly. But
I think the race was red flagged and backdated two laps back to when Larkham was leading. But then they went back and looked at everything and realized, we only needed to go back one lap, and awarded the victory to Murph.
Which was quite right.
Had crashed.
So Murph wins the round for the first 3 years, 2001, 2002, 2003. So Kmart Racing, who are a player, they are the secondary Clayton team to the Holden Racing team. And when we talk about Clayton, I think a lot of people just say it not realising what it is. It's the Melbourne suburb, Clayton, where the teams were based. kind of colloquially known as Clayton.
Yeah. The original business park is in the process of being knocked down at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Bosch is just across the road from there in Centre Road in Clayton. So you had this period. So they had the 5-minute penalty in 02 at Bathurst. They were fast all year. He wins Pookie. 03, the change to the VY. They win Bathurst, lap of the gods, wins Pookie. I mean, prime time peak for Murph and for that event. And that was the year he won the 24-hour too with Brock around that time too. So, and he was contending for the championship. So somewhere, sometime, someone had to get the job done and beat him. And it took till 04 for Jason Bright to win that round overall. But the one thing that stands out even more from all of that to me when I stop and look back, Marcus Ambrose wins a race in 2004 for Stone Brothers. So finally, the Kiwi-owned team gets a win at their home track.
Mm.
It's the only Ford race win there from 2001 until did a Ford win again at Pookie before the championship left at the end of 07?
I don't believe it did.
I think it was all Holdens that won all the races off the top of my head.
I tell you what, though, Fords had come close prior to that.
Oh, they did everything but.
Yeah.
Everything but.
You talk about Ambrose winning that one race. In 2002, Ambrose had that last race stitched up.
Oh, that was the tyres, the stake that popped out through the tyre bundle.
The star picket at the tyre bundle at the first chicane where I think, I don't know how many cars lost tyres due to it, but it was quite a few. And Ambrose was leading Todd Kelly in the closing laps, and I think Murph was
fifth. Rick was in the mix too. Rick was in the mix.
And the swing of Ambrose copping that puncture, dropping to, I think, 15th or whatever it was, and Murph gaining position, Ambrose would have won not only the race, but he also would have won the round.
Mm. Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Didn't.
Correct. The 2004 round is a memory for me because that's the first time I went. And I stayed at the Coulthards.
All right.
At Fabian's joint. So he was in Porsches at the time. Chris Jewell, who's Cam Waters' manager these days, been friends with Chris for a long time, and he had a connection to Fabian through Greg Murphy Racing, Carrera Cup, around that time. I can't remember why I was there. I think I was doing on-track commentary. I think I was helping Chris or filling in for Chris. I can't even remember what we were doing. But the one thing that stands in my mind, whenever I see Fabian's dad, Ricky, which is rarely, occasionally at races and stuff, this is 20 years ago, mind you. The standout memory from my trip to Pukekohe in 2004 is not Greg Murphy not winning or Jason Bright winning the round or Marcus Ambrose winning a race. It's Flaming Zambucas at the Coulthards at 2 a.m. on whatever morning it was.
I had a feeling this was going to be the first of the post-race stories.
Still talked about 20 years on. Fabian was busy racing and, I mean, he just went to bed. But smart call. Yes. But if ever I see the Coulthards, it's always, I remember that night with the Flaming Zambucas came out.
Oh, dear.
Dangerous. I could do that stuff back then. Can't rebound from such things these days in the time required to get a day at the racetrack done in the meantime. So Murph only had a year off, though, because he swapped
teams. And
he was
on the podium, it's worth
noting.
He was
on the podium. He did win one of the races, didn't he, in 04? That was the year, actually, that they canned the first race from Saturday and moved it to Sunday because of the weather. The weather was horrendous. Right. So there was a few weird things with weather going on because in 03 it rained to the point where they ran the shootout and then annulled the results and went back to the regular qualifying.
That is weird.
Yeah, yeah. And then 04 you had that delayed, and I think that's the year that there was, maybe it was a couple of years later, but a Carrera Cup Porsche went through the fence, rolled down the front straight into the fence and over the fence and luckily didn't wipe anybody out.
That was incredibly lucky.
That was mega lucky. Support categories in New Zealand rounds have over the years been really good. Whether it was the domestic NZ Championship with V8s or it was their GT3 Cup Challenge, which was in essence Carrera Cup.
The Sanyongs,
that's where I was going.
They were visually entertaining to watch.
Yeah, they've been fun. Central muscle cars are always good value.
Toyota Racing Series has also given us a fair bit because that was the first place we got to see Shane Van Gisbergen on a Supercars Championship undercard.
Was that Pookie?
Yes.
06?
06 or 07.
Well, 07
in that
was the year
of time,
that he, yeah. Yeah, you know, 07 was the year, though, that he eventually debuted at Auron Park in the supercar.
But mm.
They loved racing in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand as an audience of ours, when you look at all of our data in terms of our website visitors, our podcast listeners, our store customers with our V8 Sleuth online store who buy books and all the other stuff that we do, model cars. We've got a massive contingent of New Zealand fans who love supercars, who love motorsport. They've got such great history over there with their own history, as well as our kind of joint Australasian motorsport history, which is which is really cool. And all of this stuff has made its own chapter of that amazing overall book. But there's probably a couple of little standouts. I mean, 2007 was the last time that we ran at Pookie before it moved to Hamilton. Mm. I think a lot of people forget the Hamilton era.
Yeah.
Because it was, what, 5 years, 08 to 12. And for those who probably – you could probably understand it from the TV coverage, but that track was in essence a business district. The Frankton Business District was – it's kind of like a it's like a little bit of an industrial region.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't like definitely in the city. It wasn't
in
the city streets per se, like an Adelaide or a Gold Coast. It had a different feel to it. But that turned on some interesting racing. Not as good racing, I don't think, as Pukekohe.
Mm.
But it still had some interesting stuff go on. That back chicane where Blige used to launch through there made some of the best vision I've ever seen.
The plenty of opportunities for photographers to get some gold there.
And plenty of shock absorbers to get absolutely poleaxed.
So oh, yes.
They definitely did tear them up there.
But that's not where the big shunt occurred in that in 2008, in that first run. Thinking of just what happened to Jamie Wincup that weekend.
Next corner.
Yeah, next corner. He ended up – it was during qualifying. He came across Todd Kelly, and Todd zigged when Jamie thought he was going to zag.
Todd had a bit of a wobble off the road and came back sort of on from offline and tagged him, and that was it.
That was the end of his weekend.
And he was done. Yeah. He was minus 300 points for the weekend and came from a long way back to still win the championship that year, which was – quite insane that he managed to do that.
I've always found it funny that the review DVD from that year did not mention his absence and didn't explain why he went from leading the championship to being nowhere
because
after that weekend.
Because it was a short, sharp, cut-and-shut edit job. That's why not much additional work going into those back in the day, just quietly. A few other things spring to mind. A lot of people probably didn't realise, but behind the pit straight at Wellington is the Waikato Stadium.
Hamilton?
Where the Chiefs play. Well, what did I say?
Wellington.
Hamilton. I meant Hamilton. So is where the Chiefs, the Super Rugby team, played. That's the only game of Super Rugby I've ever been to see.
Yeah, right.
Because it was literally as you walk out of the track. Yeah, it was cool though. Of course, rugby in New Zealand, insane. Like they love supercars. They are addicted. Like seriously, you would go to the pub and go to the urinals and the rugby's on the telly at the urinal.
And you can't miss a moment.
I kid you not. Like dead set, that's true.
It sounds like AFL in Victoria.
I've never seen a toilet above a urinal showing AFL. and we do love AFL in Melbourne, those who are into it, but that's a whole nother level. There was the time too that I remember flying over to Hamilton and encountering a raging toothache.
Yeah, right.
And I had to find a local dentist, which I did, and they looked after me and they said, here, take these tablets for the rest of the week to just get you through the weekend. Mm-hmm. And when you get back to Australia, you can get yourself sorted and go back to the dentist.
Yes.
Horrible toothache. Like, I don't think I've ever had a toothache other than that weekend.
Yeah, right.
And it took until the Sunday night / Monday morning to get rid of it. So I can only presume that the massive quantity of alcohol consumed on the Sunday night may have killed the bug.
It is a disinfectant.
I wish I'd done it on the Thursday night. It would have been worth the headache to get rid of that toothache for the weekend. Shane van Gisbergen is always in the news when you think of supercars in New Zealand. A lot of it's Pookie. With, you know, the parking on Scott McLaughlin, he and Jamie Wincup making contact there while they were fighting for the championship in, what, 16, I think
16,
it was.
Yep.
Shane winning that last round in 2022 at Pookie.
Yep.
But go back to Hamilton. I think it gets overlooked that that's where he won his first V8 supercar race for Stone Brothers in New Zealand. I think that was the weekend they just announced his re-signing. So it was the perfect storyline and the perfect element. But I think it's kind of been forgotten in the whole Shane story.
It was such a huge moment. I mean, Shane had been around since, as we touched on, since 2007, and it was pretty clear the level of promise that he had, but he hadn't quite managed to crack it for a win. You think towards the end of 2010, he came so close so many times, that fantastic battle with Jamie Wincup at the Gold Coast, running out of fuel at Homebush in the final race of the year, and it was, of all places to get it done, on home soil with a Kiwi team. You couldn't have scripted that better.
No, that was perfect. it wasn't a sign of what was to come, though. Stone Brothers by that stage were not the 04-05 level team. On their day, though, they could still generate a result. He did win another race that year in Darwin.
Hidden Valley, yeah.
Yeah, so a great scenario and a really cool part of that. That car that he drove, that SP Tools number 9 Falcon, that was kind of that, he sort of had three chapters of his supercar career, didn't he, really? The Stone Brothers chapter, the Techno chapter, which was a pretty short one, and then the Red Bull 888 chapter. But that's probably the peak car of his Stone Brothers
for sure
career. And that car's actually being restored back to that identical livery from the original files and stickers. The stickers were different that weekend. You might remember that that was in the wake of Christchurch.
Christchurch earthquake, yes.
Correct. So there was a bunch of different signage on that car that weekend than the normal SP Tools number 9 livery. So that car's going back to that, and I'm pretty sure it's going to pop up on the market at some stage soon. So
yeah, right.
If you're an SVG collector or a Kiwi race nut,
hang on to your pennies.
Yeah, hang on to your pennies. To get Shane's first championship race winning supercar is a pretty cool thing.
That was an interesting weekend overall because that – so Shane won on the Sunday, and on the Saturday we had a Kelly Racing 1-3.
Oh, and that was when it rained and Rick won and Todd finished third.
Yeah.
But then isn't it interesting that in Darwin, what happened in Darwin?
Rick won the other race that weekend, didn't he?
Rick won one race in Darwin and Shane won the other.
There you go. I always forget about the Darwin win.
They kind of replicated it in Darwin.
Didn't manage it at Sandown, though, later in the year.
No.
Rick won a wet race.
Yeah, didn't quite get it to keep the format going. I think it was 2011. Maybe it was before or after. Remember Good Charlotte were at Hamilton? Remember Good Charlotte doing stuff with Jack Daniels and Rick and Todd?
Yeah, they had quite a good weekend, didn't they?
From memory. I remember they went for rides in the cars and all that sort of jazz. They were in the pub Sunday night with the industry, you know, journos and drivers and teams who are out, you know, having beers.
The Maddens, they were just like us.
There just hanging out, chatting to anyone who chatted to them, having drinks with anyone, taking photos, all that stuff. Like, they were absolutely normal dudes, absolutely normal dudes. They didn't see themselves, you know, they weren't roped off in a corner or any of that sort of stuff. They were good value that weekend.
Lifestyles of the rich and the famous, eh?
Lifestyles of the rich, yeah. No, see. Thank you. I'm willing to go that far. You're not.
I'm not.
You covered this earlier. We said we'd come back to it. So 2012 was the last Hamilton event. Mm-hmm. Hamilton 400, I think it was always referred to.
Yes.
So the last win on the Sunday went to Mark Winterbottom, who beat Jamie Whincup in a bit of an epic. They were stuck into it in the closing stages of that race.
It was a fantastic battle to the end we saw later.
Yeah, that was the issue. So somehow in Australia, the cord got pulled and the last few laps weren't seen on television here, and they were replayed, I think, at some later date somehow.
They were replayed 90 seconds. In between the checkered flag being waved, the broadcast, the plug being put back in, the commentators being told, and then they then re-spool it and show what was missed before Mark Winterbottom gets to pit lane.
Right, in the slowdown lap.
On the cool down lap, yeah.
Right.
They had enough time to show what happened before Frosty got back.
Meanwhile, people are losing their nuts.
I remember watching it with mates and, yeah, we just did not know what was going on. There was a lot of yelling at the TV.
Oh, see, I was there. I knew everything that happened but just didn't know that – I was working in TV at the time, I think it came through in the headset that – got an issue. There's been a problem in Australia. wasn't quite the problem that we could have thought that we'd had. But anyway, they dealt with it pretty well, all things considered, and managed to turn that around. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out. So we went back to Pukki for 2013, a modified Pukekohe.
Yes.
With the chicane in the back straight, which I don't, it's a bit like Bathurst in the chase. I don't think it really took away from the character, and I think it added a passing spot because previously the hairpin, guys with hot brakes, having to come from a long way back, yeah, you could pass, but I think the over-under coming out of that chicane into that hairpin actually open it into a better passing opportunity and a bit more side-by-side and a bit more nudge and a bit more bump and side-by-side off to the next corner, I reckon it was better.
Well, we didn't – well, as that 2013 event proved, they didn't always make it to the next corner. Was it Jamie Wincup and Mark Winterbottom that went in there side-by-side and didn't quite come out the other side?
That was another one in the chapter of those two's time together in Super. Was that the one that McLaughlin then won after that?
I feel like McLaughlin led that one. Oh, no. Because Wincup got into Frosty on the opening lap of that race.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So this is that was a different race entirely.
So again, we go back to and remember too that Pookie had a lot of the Hamilton Street race elements there. The control tower, the podium, the concrete barriers were added to Pookie in 13. So quite a bit of change there, and obviously the cars changed because Car of the Future was new for 2013 as well. And as much as so Scott McLaughlin's first championship race win, that was a big element. That was a really big result and a big breakthrough for him. So you've got this amazing scenario where Van Gisbergen and McLaughlin get their first championship supercar wins at home.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't script that any better. Everyone forgets McLaughlin had won a race at Albert Park, but because it's kind of non-championship, non-points, non-vision usage around that time with FOM and all that stuff, it sort of happened, but it didn't really happen, if that makes sense. So amazing result. But the thing that stands out more to me is the Jason Bright. How many times did we go, you couldn't script this, you couldn't script this? You couldn't script Shane Van Gisbergen winning that last round in 22 when Will Davison looked like he was probably could have won it.
Mm.
You couldn't script the Murph three in a row. You couldn't script Van Gisbergen winning the first one. You couldn't script McLaughlin winning his first one there in the way that he did. And you couldn't script that the BJR, number 8, BOC car, the Jason Richards, legacy car, his car that he had driven for that
team. His sponsor, his number.
All of that stuff, that the win goes to that car driven by another Jason in Jason Bright the first year that the Jason Richards trophy is on it. You can't script it. Sport is the best form of reality television that you'll find anywhere.
That victory still is one of the still is an emotional point when you talk to anyone who was with BJR at that time. Brad Jones recently talked about it on the BJR Rundown podcast. It's part of the Motorsport Podcast Network. It's still one of his career highlights that they were able to get that done that weekend.
He's talked about that. I think it was on the JR pod that we did, that I did with a few different people. Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
And I was in Brad's office only recently while road tripping back from the Bathurst 6 hour. I stopped in Albury. And he did talk about this, that if you go in Brad's office, which not many of you will ever get to do that because Albury's a long way away from everything, he's got very few things on the wall in his office. One of them is him driving the Le Mans Audi, Crocodile Audi, which is fair enough.
Yes.
There is one retro poster of an event from Hugh Muir from back in the day. Of course, grew up going there.
Long time family connection. Yep.
And the other thing is JR. Yeah. So, you would think, and I'm taking the piss here, but Bradley would have 50 photos of Bradley on the wall.
It does office. Give that impression. No, it's not the case.
And the JR star remains on those BJR cars.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that tempered the emotion of that win, Jason Bright getting the win,
yes.
Charlotte, Jason's wife, being there with her girls to present the trophy the first time back at Pukekohe, is that Brighty punched the lights out. He went for the victory jump and fist in the air and promptly smashed the lights.
The sequence
and added
photos.
A nice bit of humour to a emotional moment.
Lighten
the mood a little bit. Yeah.
The sequence of photos is fantastic.
Yeah, if you just click through them, it's
The look of
I'm a really big, and I think we should do more of this as a sport. Not forgetting that we had a trophy in Hamilton, the Mark Porter Trophy, and that is, if you look at the photos of that, that was a hefty, huge, amazingly crafted trophy.
Mm.
That was awesome. And we talked about this in our office recently because we did ponder while we were doing – so if you're at Taupo this weekend, get yourself a copy of the official program for the ITM Taupo Super 400. It's available at the official merchandisers at the track this weekend. We've published it. We don't have any available to sell online in Australia. So if you're in Australia, you're going to have to get a Kiwi mate to send you one across. But one of the things that occurred to me when we were doing all that, we did a story about the JR Trophy and we did a breakout about the Mark Porter Trophy because I feel that was an important story to tell. And the last thing that I could find online as to where that trophy went after the Hamilton race stopped was that it said that it went to the Waikato Museum in Hamilton to be on permanent display. And then I think you picked that up and said, oh, I think that might have changed.
Yeah.
At some point, and I've been able to find out what's happened to it.
You have,
and I haven't had a chance to tell you until now.
Oh, fantastic.
So I got in touch with Adi Porter, who's Mark's wife. So many people still know Goosey, as she's known, around the racing scene. And I said, Goosey, what happened to the trophy? She said, oh, the family have got it in New Zealand.
That's
so
excellent.
It's with Mark's family.
I'm in very New happy Zealand, to hear
which
that.
Is, which is ace. So, yes, it does continue. But I love... There is a thing about supercars over its history where they've been very knee-jerky to name an award in honour of someone. Mm. Dan Weldon trophy thing for the International Drivers at the Gold Coast sprang to mind a little bit. To a very harsh degree, the Barry Sheen medal is a little bit like that too. But the Jason Richards one absolutely fits. The Mark Porter one absolutely fit. Surely there's a way to find a way for more events to have more trophies named in honour of legends, special people, special situations. I mean, Peter Brock Trophy at Bathurst makes total sense. The Porter and Richards trophies makes total sense. Larry Perkins at the Grand Prix. Give us something to race for rather than one of those crappy generic trophies.
I see your point, but the fact that there are just that small handful of trophies, that makes it more special. Like, that makes it more of a talking point every time we go to these events, that this is the thing, this person from the sports history has such a close connection to this event. I don't think you can replicate it for every event. I mean, who are you giving it to at Darwin? Are you handing out the Bryce Fullwood trophy?
Bryce would say yes to that.
I'm sure he
Bryce
would.
Bryce would say that. It'd be the Middies
Cup. The Prince of Darwin, of course.
The Prince of Darwin will get a gig there. I think Sandown. I think Simmons Plains Tasmania has enough history, whether it's John Bow or Marcus Ambrose.
John Goss
could even get a gig. I think there is enough. Yes, Darwin's unique. Townsville's probably not really. But I think there's some of those more historic venues that have been around for a very long time, that there's someone with a special connection there over the years that we should be honouring in some way, shape or form. And that will elevate that round with something else to make it more important. Another sprint round in Tassie, yeah, great. But if you can add another layer to it, I'd be all up for that. And I'm sure can't do it for all of them because there's not awesome in every moment, Will. Because if there's awesome in every moment, as the tagline used to be for supercars, none of them are awesome.
It's true.
It There'd takes be a the lot crappy of- race to make the good race a good race.
It's true. That otherwise, you've got a whole heap of forgettable moments.
Correct.
Not unforgettable ones.
Correct. Exactly right. I see where you're going with that.
Yes.
The Kiwis have given us a lot at New Zealand in terms of supercars.
David Thexton?
Yeah. Wasn't where I was going,
I
figured
it wasn't. No, to be honest,
not really.
Worth noting, he made his final championship race starts at Pukekohe in 2003 on home soil.
He didn't go to Eastern Creek that year.
Didn't qualify.
Oh, right. He was there.
Championship race starts, not round starts.
Okay. And yes, I did try to get him on the podcast once. It might happen. It might still happen.
Yes.
You never know. The Kiwi's success in the New Zealand rounds has been crucial to its ongoing success.
Mm.
If that round had been dominated by Aussies with the occasional Kiwi popping up for a result, have a look at the wins over the years. Greg Murphy, Shane Van Gisbergen, Scott McLaughlin. I mean, they've won a lot there.
Yeah.
That has been as much as the Kiwis love supercars and they love motorsport, having Kiwi drivers to not just follow, but that are in the headlines has been the element that's made that event absolutely sit up and have people take notice. If it had been once in a blue moon that a Kiwi had won or run at the front, I think it would have struggled to gain more of a foothold. But the fact that we've been in the era where Kiwis have been so prominent has been absolutely perfect.
Not just prominent, but also battling each other. I mean, you referenced the McLaughlin-Van Gisbergen battle in 2018. Like, there are a few... Okay, so there was a lot of media attention trying to build up a big personal rivalry between them. It wasn't really. They're just, intense racers who were going head-to-head trying to be the first Kiwi home.
Driving for opposite manufacturers, teams, I mean, enough elements for them to be right. It's a kind of a bit like the, you know, Brock and Moffat were never nasty, bitter rivals. They were rivals in that they were in opposite camps with opposite types of cars, opposite types of people. They were opposite in pretty much every way you could look at.
And if the other guy's winning, it means you're not.
Which makes you a rival.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is now we've got five Kiwis heading to New Zealand. Wasn't it 2018 when five Kiwis qualified for the shootout?
Yeah, including
Stanaway in the Rabble car.
Yeah, yeah, his best result of the year.
Yeah, yeah. So we've now got five, but we don't have like it's probably at no other time in the supercars period where we don't have. I mean, Andre Heimgartner's pretty much the pick in terms of previous results, experience, capability. Ryan Wood's fresh and new. Jackson Evans is fresh and new to it. Matt Payne is clearly on the way, in the right way. He's showing all the right signs and in a team that's going in the right direction as well. But we don't have a bona fide Kiwi. Like Murph was a star before the championship went there in 01. McLaughlin and Van Gisbergen had become stars in the build-up to what they did in New Zealand. These other guys are at sort of a lower level is probably not quite the term, but I don't see the personalities that we had with those other guys. So it's going to have to be the on-track results that elevate these Kiwis up through into the consciousness of, you know, sports fans and more general people in New Zealand and in Australia for that matter.
I don't know. That video that Grove Racing put out recently starring Matt Payne and Richie Stanaway, I feel like that showcased a bit of personality.
What was it?
The one where they're talking about the livery reveal video.
Haven't seen it, didn't see it. Explain to our listeners.
Let's just say they showcased Richie's personality in an entertaining way, being quiet and reserved. They did a good job of showcasing that in an entertaining way.
So you're going to have to make us go and look at it.
I am.
All right. Go and look
here
at
to
it.
Support the sport.
Go and look at it. Anzac Day race, 2014. A lot of people probably forget on the Friday of that round was Anzac Day. So a chance for the championship in the perfect of Australia and New Zealand situations to get together and race on the Friday there as well. I think that's been kind of overlooked. I mean, they had the great Anzac liveries for HRT for the New Zealand round for a period there in the Tander Courtney era. But racing on Anzac Day itself was something, just the way the calendar kind of worked that year of where that round was sitting, did really work well. And we're not that far away from it this year, in the way that the 2024 calendar is 10 years on. But that was the last time I've been to a New Zealand supercar round, I've got to tell you, 2014.
Oh, yeah, the end of the Channel 7 deal?
It was. Yeah. After that, it was the Fox deal and I wasn't involved. So I haven't been back, but I'd like to go back because it would be great. It would be great. And there's plenty of other New Zealand motorsport to go and have a look at too, like Scope Classic and some of those great festivals and historic GP at Taupo and all that sort of stuff. So plenty of cool old cars over there to do a bit of sleuthing on. But we've gone all this time.
Yes.
And we haven't talked about the park-in.
The park-in, yes. Yeah. I feel Shane like it was referenced. Scott.
Now, you are not one to rock the boat, Will. You are a calm and considered chap.
Generally, yes.
Did Shane deliberately do that?
Shane Van Gisbergen can place a race car consistently within a millimeter of wherever he wants it to be.
So that's a yes.
Well, I don't think he's does anything by accident.
So that's a yes.
Yes.
Okay, there you go. I love the theatre of it. I love the theatre of it.
It was so good.
We need more
He
theater.
Should have owned it. This is the thing. This is the issue.
And this
he
is the issue.
He should have owned it and just said, and just... Yeah.
And this is the issue of Shane's whole supercar time. He could have and probably should have just put that black hat on because he could have been a bit more of the bad guy. And he's not trying to be bad.
But
he's a hard racer, smart racer. He should have – he probably would have made more money out of it too if he'd put on the black hat.
the Russell Ingall approach.
Exactly.
But this is the thing. The black hat's not for everyone. If it doesn't suit your personality type or who you are,
can see straight
you can't
– oh,
exactly. You can't always put that act on all the time.
I do have to laugh though that you are wearing a black cap right now literally.
I do Pearl most days black as cap. It happens, yeah.
You are a regular black cap wearer, but you are such a non-black cap.
Got to break stereotypes.
that was a great element. Was it 2019 that Jamie Wincup referenced the stewards having too many red wines when there was a safety car situation didn't go right.
The most expensive red wine Jamie Wincup's ever ordered, I think. Was it five grand and some community service?
He had to visit race control.
I feel like that didn't end up happening until like Bathurst 2021 because of COVID.
He got out of it for a while.
It took ages for it to happen, but yeah, he said some very pointed things about Tim Schenken and the rest of the fine people at Motorsport Australia he was very quickly made to regret.
Yeah, we did get a bunch of drivers have their best result of the season in that particular race because they kind of got elevated to a spot in the field that normally they wouldn't be running.
And poor Lee Holdsworth lost a shot at a win as well through all of that because he was the guy who didn't pass the safety car when Wincup took off.
Yeah,
so he got hurt arguably the most.
He played the straight bat and got burnt by it even more. So,
yeah. I feel like that happened a few times at Pukekohe purely because of the short lap and it was a challenging situation.
And it was always challenging, not just because of the short lap time, but because of the long roll in to the pit lane.
Mm.
From where you peeled off the track to where you slowed down to get to the speed limit line, then work your way around the road there to pop into the actual lane. The lane itself is a fair way away from the actual racetrack as reference pointing.
Mm.
And then once you get to the end of the pit lane, you're pretty much back out on the track, bang.
Yeah.
So it's really unique compared to other tracks in the way that that all would play out. And as you say, a sub 60-second lap and, you know, however many 28 cars, 24 cars, 30 cars, however many, whatever year it was, always ended up with a couple of those sorts of dramas over the journey. There's no doubt. Craig Lowndes' rebuild job, 2015, where he had that blown tyre that fenced him.
Mm.
That was an awesome effort by that team to get him back the next day. That was
title contender at that point as well. Yep. They needed to do that because he was in the midst of a battle with Mark Winterbottom, and he was the only 888 car still with a mathematical shot at the title because Jamie Wincup had had such a terrible year throughout the first half of the season.
Yeah, so that was a standout.
His best and last shot at a win in New Zealand.
And that was where I was going next. You beat me to it. It is an unbelievable scenario that Craig Lowndes competed in V8 supercars from the Pukekohe period through Hamilton and back to Pukekohe from 2001 to 2018, did not win a single race.
Mm.
Didn't win a round, nothing like that, but didn't win a race in, 40-something, 50-odd races?
Something like that, yeah.
It's one of those anomalies of history that just that track wasn't on the calendar when he was in his HRT first period when he won pretty much everywhere at some stage.
And the one time they did go there, he wasn't in the car with it was Murph instead because he'd left for Formula 3000.
Exactly right. So he goes through a couple of years of Gibson 00, of FPR, then 888 start to rise. He did get a pole there in 05.
And then got shoved off at turn one by Ambrose.
He and Ambrose got together. And then he never quite got there. And then, of course, Wincup became the dominator of that team and dominated at Hamilton there for a couple of years as well.
So,
apart from the first year where you get to, go onto the track and have a run in the races. But, yeah, Craig never really got another sniff then until that sort of 2015 period. But because he was leading when that tyre went too, wasn't he?
He was leaving Dave Reynolds and it went into turn one.
Yeah, yeah. So one of those really weird things that one of the greatest of all time didn't get a win in all of those races that he started in New Zealand. It's quite an amazing statistic. A bloke who has won in he won in Hamilton and he won at Pukekohe too, is Will Davison. And really, he should have won the 2022 just as a little refresher because we've gone some time since the Supercar Championship ran in New Zealand. So last time was in 22. It was September, was it not?
It was.
It was before Bathurst, round before Bathurst. So Shane Van Gisbergen wins the round, that epic battle with Cam Waters, where they are side by side rubbing through that last corner right on the knife edge. It was more of that classic Pukekohe racing that you get through that last section of that lap.
Mm.
But
it should have been for second place.
Will Davison had it shot. He had it pretty much shot to pieces there. But they had a loose wheel, didn't they, on that DJR car. He went out, had to come back in and get it put back on, but got a PLP, pit lane penalty.
Because they sent it out with
because
a loose
it was
wheel.
An unsafe release with a loose wheel on it. So that one went by the wayside. And it's the only time I think you'll ever see Cam Waters' monster car with number 50 on it that weekend because it was NZ's 50th anniversary, birthday, one or the other.
Yes.
So one of those unique things that you'll always know what year that photo's from because the number's different
it's true.
On the car, which makes it very good to be able to try to figure all that stuff out. So we said before about Kiwis and two rounds being there. I think we both agree that's the go. That's the aim.
Yeah.
Where's the other one? Where could you put the other one? Where's logical?
Probably Hampton.
It makes logical sense, but then that puts two on the North Island. Because
see, my Kiwi topography and knowledge of where things are is not great. So
Highlands is on the South Island.
Right.
So that's near Queenstown. That's the Tony Quinn track that had the GT 101 races. And awesome track. I don't know that it's got the capabilities for what's required for supercars from externally, not just the racing and the track, but enough room for that level of spectators, accommodation. I'm not the guru of all things Kiwi, but that might be a little bit of a struggle. And I think getting a street race up in New Zealand anywhere is really hard with resource consent. And they found that some time back when they were looking at other options post Pookie 2007, and Hamilton ended up coming onto the plate. But there was time when I think there was a push to try to revive Wellington even, or make a street race in Auckland, or just do something somewhere.
But well, so much of that Wellington Docklands area has changed over the past 30 years that really I don't think you could.
Not certainly there.
All the areas that used to serve as, I think in 96, the paddock area for those 12 cars was under a state library or something?
It was underground somewhere. Yeah. We've got photos here somewhere of cars, but it was like the days of the Gold Coast Indy where support categories would be in the car park,
in the hotel car park, hotels
and all that stuff. It was very, very similar. So it's a cool part of V8 supercar and supercar racing history. Going to New Zealand has enriched the category, the sport, and we just got to find a way to do another one and back to back it and have more people in New Zealand be able to see their favourites and our favourites up close and personal and racing in the top category in this part of the world. Because, I mean, I said at the start of the show, I'll say it again, I understand the financial elements of doing overseas races. I'm not against overseas races in other markets, but this is the overseas market that needs to be the number one priority to find a way to have another round there, because the population's great enough, the interest is great enough, the sponsorship crossover flow is great enough. This is where the energy has to go for that next overseas round, for sure, before they worry about, I don't think it's well served by, Formula One are not going to pay supercars to go to an Asian F1 race somewhere.
Mm.
They're not going to fund that. No need to. Why would they bother?
Well, if they need to add three rounds to hit the next TV pay milestone or whatever it is, well, a second round in New Zealand is a logical place to fill one of those gaps.
Two in Oz, one in NZ.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it makes total sense. Question for this weekend, though.
Mm-hmm.
Topor, what's it going to give us? I mean, we knew what we were going to get at Pookie. We learned what we would get at Hamilton. I feel like there's a whole different vibe to this one in terms of what we're going to get as a race. I've spoken to a couple of people, and they are telling me that the tyres will be shot within seven laps.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think too much rubber is going to be left on any Dunlop control tyre by the end of the weekend.
Does that make the racing better?
It'll make it more unpredictable, because there will be people who will be able to manage that and people who will get it right and people who will very much get it wrong.
I'm really intrigued. And you've got the Brody Kostecki element as
well. Brody's back.
His return to the championship. So many elements. It's going to be another chapter in New Zealand V8 supercar history, no matter what unfolds on the track. If you're going to be in Taupo this weekend, enjoy it. It is going to be a special weekend of supercars racing. We'll have coverage right across the weekend on v8sleuth.com.au. I've got a feeling that there's going to be a lot to talk about out of this round. I feel like there's a bit of bull ring around Taupo and these styles of cars and the size of cars. There's a few guys who've been there before. There's actually more than you probably think that have been and raced at Taupo before.
Yeah, I didn't realise Dave Reynolds had raced there in GT3 Cup back in the day.
A1 Grand Prix days, I think it was.
Maybe a bit later than that.
Back in, no, it was when he was doing that series. When he was doing that series, the Mad Butcher car.
Yes.
Thomas Randall raced Toyota Racing Series there. There is quite a few who have raced there previously in various categories over the years. So that will count for nothing, though, when they roll out for first practice in the races over the weekend. It's going to be cool. So I hope you've enjoyed this little look back, by the way, in New Zealand. We love doing these look backs at the tracks and the history around these events and some of the stories and some of the things we've forgotten and some of the things that are burnt into our memory bank. What is the standout moment of all moments in New Zealand Supercars Championship history, Will? What's the one that if you had to pick a first on the podium, what is the moment in the history of V8 supercars, supercars slash New Zealand?
It's probably that first win by Murph, jumping up on the bonnet, the big roar from the crowd. Yeah, it's hard to go past that. As a footnote, I would like to also point out that the fastest ever lap in Touring Car Championship slash Supercars history also happened in New Zealand. So I'd rank that quite close.
In terms of single lap?
Single lap average speed.
Qualifying from one of the years.
Correct.
And so we got the fastest ever Australian average speed race at the Bathurst 500 a few years ago, didn't we?
We sure did.
So the fastest ever race is in New Zealand?
I believe the fastest race was in New Zealand, but I'm just talking about individual lap.
Yeah, average speed.
Yeah.
Yep. And Pookie's been, you know, the original Pookie was able to generate all of that stuff. So they have added to the history books in more ways than one.
They
That's
have.
Definitely sure.
So what's your moment?
The Murph 01 one is a pretty strong contender.
Mm-hmm.
The Jason Richards trophy, Jason Bright punching the lights, the emotion around that I think was something pretty special.
Mm.
But I'm going McLaughlin 13 because it was a bit of a turn up. He wasn't driving the powerhouse car.
Mm.
It was a bit of a surprise with what unfolded in that race. And it was kind of like the Kiwi race fans, I mean, they knew who Scott McLaughlin was.
Yeah. He'd
been around for a little while up to that point. But that's when he became the real deal.
Yes.
That's when he won a race on home soil. The roar, I mean, that crowd at Pookie has roared on many occasions. There's not just one or two. All those Murph wins, some of those close battles with Shane and Cam in 22, the JR Trophy win, any time a Kiwi has performed unbelievably well there. But that McLaughlin victory, which I wasn't there that weekend, actually. I was watching at home. I tell you what. I was watching that at home on TV with Nick Percat and Bronny Ingerson, who were dating at the time, because Nick obviously wasn't in V8s.
Yes.
And so we just had a barbecue for the weekend and watched Pookie.
Watched some good
and
racing.
And watched McLaughlin win, and we all cheered like crazy people. So to me, like the reaction to that, what it meant, where it sat in his whole career trajectory, Oh, it's a hard one to pick, and I'm not belittling those other ones because they're very special too. And a lot of people know my Jason Richards love of that moment and that trophy and all that stuff too. But I'm going to go McLaughlin 13 with Murph 01 and the JR Trophy running at the podium.
We talk about forgotten things already in this pod, but off the back of McLaughlin winning, it's often forgotten that that was nearly a GRM 1-2 because Alex Kremer was second behind him for a big chunk of that race.
Penalized?
He jumped the start and then had and copped that. That's a penalty for that, but also had a throttle failure towards the end. Mm. So it probably wouldn't have happened anyway. And, of course, Scotty sat out the last race of the weekend because he crashed on Sunday morning.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about Paul Morris's rollover in 07 when he and Brad Jones got together. JR's rollover in the Team Dynamic car. Took him out for the weekend in 03.
Yep. Bradley rolling over.
Yes. With Andrew assisting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The first of two straight weekends of Brad Jones rolling a race car.
John Bowes throttle jamming in his 200th round in 06 and firing into the wall and breaking our good friend Scotty Wensley, the photographer's leg.
Yeah, of course it was.
The reverse grid race.
Well, I was going to say it turned out it was JB's 201st round when we later did the revised
the
numbers.
I thought we were wrapping up this episode, but we've kind of re-sparked it, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, the reverse grid race.
There is pretty much something from every year that is a standout, yep, I remember that moment.
Yeah.
Which only goes to underline how important that these Kiwi rounds have been. So for our Kiwi listeners and fans and followers, thank you for your love of V8s and of supercars and motorsport because it has made the modern era of supercars racing all the better to have the Kiwi contingent. Not just driving the cars or owning them, but having around in your backyard is really cool, and I hope everyone at Taupo this weekend is a part of something really, really special. We'll be watching on the box from here in Australia and checking it out, Will and I. But in the meantime, I think that's us done. We haven't predicted a winner for this weekend, but we've gone through every possible scenario of who did what when of every other year. So
sport will be the winner this weekend.
Sport will be the winner. Motorsport will be the winner. I hope you all manage to pick a winner and claim some bragging rights over someone who picked somebody else. But we'll have another episode of the V8 Super Podcast next week. It's always powered by Castrol in 2024. Get on the Rego to Oil website with Castrol too. Search for Rego, the number 2 at oil, and you'll know exactly which Castrol product put in your car wheels off to check that out now. Right, we're done. We're gone. We'll chat to you again next week. Make sure you enjoy the Motorsport News podcast and all the other stuff that we're churning out. The BJR Rundown, the Rally Sports Special Stage podcast. We've got heaps of stuff coming over the course of the rest of the year. So we will chat to you again next week. I've got some good chats lined up. Can't tell you who in the coming soon. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.